The airing of this program by this station is not an endorsement or recommendation by the station of the products or services discussed in the program. The station does not guarantee the results of any investments made by a listener to this program.
Josh Pick is the Chief Investment Advisor with Aptus Wealth Management, a state-registered investment advisory firm. This program is sponsored by Aptus Wealth Management. Exposure to ideas and financial vehicles discussed should not be considered investment advice or recommendation to buy or sell financial vehicle. This information should not be considered tax or legal advice. Individuals should consult with professionals to see if any ideas expressed would fit their specific situation. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. Securities can fluctuate and when redeemed may be more or less than when originally invested.
Welcome in to the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Radio Show. I'm Bruce Hooley here with Josh Pick of Aptus Wealth Management. We're looking forward to spending the next hour with you. Some of the topics we're going to talk about, annuities and pensions and the debt ceiling deal and real estate and all manner of investing, because you want to grow your money, you want to take advantage of the power of compound interest and buying something low and having it appreciate. That's what they specialize in at Aptus. That is getting you to the point of financial independence. A lot of people think about a retirement nest egg. You can think of it that way. You can think of it as financial independence. But we all work hard for our money, and we would like to see it multiply. And that is what they do at Aptus. They're located in Lewis Center. Their office is very close to, right off Route 750, and not far from the 270-23 interchange. They can service you as a client remotely if you're out of the area. You can take advantage of the free consultation. If you live locally, by calling their office and setting up your in-person appointment, their number is 614-917-1040, or you can make your appointment online. Their web address is aptuswealth, A-P-T-U-S, aptuswealth.com. And Josh, as we sit for this show today, we're in the fairly immediate aftermath of the debt ceiling deal. So our government will not shut down. The government will continue to pay its bills. But even after that was agreed to by Democrats and Republicans and approved by Joe Biden, we had someone on Capitol Hill this week. His name is Jeff Arkin, Director of Strategic Issues at the Government Accountability Office, telling the U.S. House of Representatives that the way we're doing business in the United States, and by business I mean running deficits, is unsustainable over the long term. How does that particular issue affect people's retirement and building wealth and in the realm of doing what you do on behalf of your clients?
Well, I think in the short run, you know, I don't think it's going to have a dramatic effect, but I think I'm hypothesizing or at least pontificating on what he meant by that. But when you think about it, a nation that is acquiring lots of debt, eventually that nation has to pay on that debt. And the forecast that we see between entitlement spending, entitlements being things like Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, things like that, and then just our debt service, meaning the amount of credit card payments mm-hmm. that we have, mm-hmm. is going to raise to a certain point where we just simply are spending the lion's share of our budget on our debt and entitlement programs and not on things like military, growing the economy, et cetera. So what will we ultimately have to do? Ultimately, we'll have to raise taxes or print money. I'm guessing it'll be a combination of the two. If we print money, then you and I pay for it through yeah. intrinsic inflation. If we just essentially start taxing people, you and I pay for that too.
I was going to say, we pay for it both ways.
Because even if we say we're going to tax corporations, corporations just turn around and pass that through yeah. in the cost of goods sold. So, you know, ultimately, do I think it's a good idea to, you know, overspend? It's a bad idea for your house and yeah. it's a bad idea for the country, but it doesn't seem like we have anybody in Washington that's willing to make adjustments.
Yeah, because I think it's hard for humans in general to take take responsibility for anything, and no politician whose continued existence as a politician depends upon people voting for them. It's kind of a difficult platform to increase your own popularity as a candidate if you're perceived to be taking money out of people's pockets, and maybe you are taking money out of people's pockets if you cut Social Security or cut those entitlements. As I was studying the debt ceiling thing, I was kind of intrigued in a depressing way by how much of our federal budget is kind of already spoken for in terms of what it's off the table that can't be negotiated. Because, as you mentioned, nobody wants to touch entitlement payments, Social Security, Medicaid, all that kind of stuff. We have to have a defense, military defense. We have to pay the interest on the debt that we have. And when you add up the commitment of, you know, resources that it takes to do those three things, That's 85% of our federal budget. So if you exempt those three elements from being cut, you're left with a very minimal sliver of the budget that even can be cut. And if a person faced that in their own personal household, that'd be a tough way to get your budget under control.
Well, and the real problem is one of those things that you talked about, which is interest on our debt.
Mm-hmm.
When you continue to acquire debt and interest goes up because of all of the interest rate hikes that we've done, the government feels that. That is becoming an increasing percentage. So it might be 85 today, but 20 years from now,
sure,
it might be 99. And now the budget has to be significantly higher. And I think at the core of that, we have long-term problems that we need to solve, but we have short-viewed thinking politicians because they're just looking at every 4 years, I need to get reelected. I'll say whatever I need to say to get reelected. Right. We really need a politician that's going, we need to fix a problem that's going to hit us hard in 30 years. So, you know, I don't mean to be the bearer of bad news here, but I think, you know, now more than ever, getting an education in not just your job, but getting an education in how to handle your finances can either put you ahead of the eight ball or way, way behind. And the train's already left the station.
Yeah, I totally agree. I was going to say that's why, you know, that folds into our discussion on a personal level for people in terms of how do they stay ahead of that particular situation and having it not apply to them. And that is, of course, what you specialize in at Aptus Wealth Management. At Aptus, they are fiduciaries, so they are legally obligated to do what is best for their clients. And you can explore becoming a client by taking advantage of their free consultation, which you can set up by calling their office 614-917-1040 or by going online and making your appointment at Aptus Wealth, APTUS, aptuswealth.com. Of course, in order to stay ahead of whatever's going to happen with our federal government and its bills, you have to be outpacing the market or at least not losing money. And that's what you specialize in. And so let's dig into maybe some of the research that you have come across, some of the articles that you come across. I study the political side of things. You study, I know, the financial side of things. And you were talking about an expert that you saw who wrote a story. And this gentleman has something to do with the American College and its income planning department.
Yeah. So I think, you know, it's important as we discuss on this show, all of the investment options that are available to you, to talk about them in a non-biased way and talk about them in a way of where they might be applicable. I think oftentimes, and we see this on advertisements, we see it on the news, you know, many investment companies will say, I would rather die or burn in hell than put my money in this one. And then this is the only solution. And the reality is that's all nonsense, right? I mean, everything has applicability, but everything has pros and cons. And one that's very polarizing that was in this article is annuities.
Mm-hmm.
Annuities, people love them, hate them, don't know about them, but everybody has some sort of opinion typically. And in the particular article, it's written by a guy named Wade. I don't know how you pronounce his last name. I believe it's Fau. It's P-F-A-U, I believe. He is the director of the Center for Retirement Income Planning at the American College. And the American College is one of the foremost colleges for financial planning,
okay,
essentially. And this is in conjunction with many other think tanks, if you will, mm-hmm, as far as investing goes. And what he did, I think, is very applicable to the retiree in particular, in that he analyzed 7-year rolling periods in the stock market and other investments. So the reason 7 years is so important is oftentimes we talk about, well, the stock market has averaged, you know, 8-9% historically, but a lot of times we're using numbers that are like 50-year averages. We're,
yeah,
using numbers that are 30-year averages, 20-year averages. And I don't know about you, but I don't plan on living to 130. So when I retire at 65, I'm really concerned about the next 10-year average.
Absolutely right. Yeah. No, if you're 60, the 40-year average of the stock market might not be that relevant.
Well, and more importantly, and we've talked a lot about on the show, when you're not withdrawing money, volatility doesn't matter.
That's right.
Other than maybe heart palpitations, right?
Sure. I mean, it's paper losses and it's not real loss until you sell.
Right. But when you're actually taking income off of, mm-hmm, these things, you are inherently somewhat selling. So the volatility of the investments that you have are very important. Now, I want to give one disclaimer in that all the returns that I'm about to share are in a published article, and they are all based upon the average current rates amongst annuity contracts in the United States. Current.
Okay.
So I'm not going back 10 years or, you know, just making up numbers. So before we get to that, let's talk about the different types of annuities. there are predominantly four different types of annuities. There are shades of gray of all of these, but predominantly four. One is an immediate annuity. It's probably what most people are thinking when they think of an annuity. An immediate annuity is much like a pension. I give the insurance company money. They dole money back out to me for the rest of my life, no matter how long I live.
So is that an immediate payback, or is that like you put in a certain amount of money? I've come across annuities like in coaching contracts where somebody will agree to become a coach somewhere, and the school will say that they're going to provide them 10 years down the road a big balloon payment. Has the school put in a certain amount of money up front, and then later is that an annuity payoff that they get?
Yes and no. Your example with a balloon payment really wouldn't be an annuity contract, but let's think about it this way. The pension that you would get if you were a governmental employee right now that pays you for the rest of your life, mm-hmm. that's an immediate annuity. So you give the insurance company a chunk of money, and they in turn agree to pay you back a monthly income forever.
Okay.
Advantage, longevity insurance. If you had 100 grand and they're giving you 10 grand a year, well, that's only going to last for 10 years if you ignore interest. But what if you live for 30 years? They keep on paying you the 10 grand, right?
Sure.
The reality is very small percentages of annuities are actually ever used that way. But when most people think of an annuity, that's what they're thinking about.
Okay.
Then there are deferred annuities. Now, you can combine what I'm about to tell you and say, well, I'm going to buy a deferred annuity and let my money grow and then turn it into an immediate annuity down the line, which is much like what you just said with your player contract or coach contract. There are three predominant types of deferred annuities. There are variable, which just think of taking mutual funds essentially and wrapping them in an insurance wrapper and hope to receive off of that indexed annuity, is tied to the market in some capacity.
Okay.
How is it tied to the market? The easiest way to explain it would be a cap rate. So if the market goes up, let's just use the S&P 500 and let's say at a 10% cap. If the market goes up this year 20%, well, you're capped at 10, you only get 10. If it goes up 9, you get the full 9. You are capped at 10. But the benefit to indexed annuities is if the market goes negative, that year you get a 0. So if you think about this kind of as an annualized contract,
yeah.
If you're doing this for 10 years, your statement every year is going to either have a 0 or a plus something. You just don't know what that plus is going to be. Now, the advantage to that is we were talking about this volatility being concerning when you're withdrawing money out.
Of course.
There is no scenario in a fixed annuity or a fixed indexed annuity where it's ever a negative year. So you eliminate volatility in its entirety, essentially. So what this gentleman from the American College did is he took historical rolling 7-year periods from 1962 all the way through 2018. So you got quite a few periods in there.
Yeah.
And he said, what was the average return of the S&P 500 over those time, the average return of those 7-year periods? And if you were in a, let's just ignore taxes. If you ignore taxes, the average net annualized rate of return is 7.27.
Okay, not bad.
Not bad. Here's the concern of most people who are looking at the economy right now. Good news, 97% of the time, you were positive. But there's a 3% chance in all of those 7-year rolling periods that over 7 years, ooh, you were actually negative.
Over 7 years?
Over 7 years.
Wow.
So
yeah, that's not good.
That's a problem, right? Now, we don't hear about that when we think about the market because you can't find a 30-year window where it was ever negative. It's always positive
right.
over 30 years,
right.
But we're talking about a 7-year window. Let's think of some of those 7-year windows, right? Well, if you invested your money in 2002, the market was negative, then you came back up, and then you got slammed with the housing crisis.
Right.
Not a good 7-year window to take a
sure.
peek at. At the same time, the bond market, and in this instance, we're using just an intermediate bond index, governmental bond index, the bond market averaged 4.15. Believe it or not, the bond market was negative 1% of the time.
Really? Interesting. Okay.
The fixed indexed annuity contract averaged 6.43. It was positive 100% of the time because there's no scenario where it can ever go backwards.
Okay.
Right? Now, why do I bring up all of this stuff? Is it because I'm, you know, cheerleading indexed annuities? Absolutely not. The reason I'm bringing it up is because there is a use for this, and the use is, one, rates are really good today because one of the byproducts of all of these interest rate hikes has been very beneficial to fixed annuities and fixed index annuities. We can talk about the others, but those are the two that I think really hold a lot of weight today. And two, we have a lot of people that are nearing retirement or retiring as the baby boomers come up on that date. And they're thinking, what am I supposed to do? If interest rates keep on rising, bonds did negative 12% last year, so that doesn't look really appealing to me. No. The stock market did negative 20% last year. That doesn't look good to me. So how am I going to generate income for the rest of my life? And this is not saying put all your money in an indexed annuity contract. But let's say I have some money in the stock market, and I know as long as I leave that alone for 10, 12, 15 years, I'm going to be good. But what if it's one of these negative 7-year windows while I'm pulling money out? I might blow up the ship before I get there. It might be a decent use of the money to say I'm going to get better than bond-like returns with zero risk as opposed to any risk at all.
Yeah, I mean, that's super interesting because, you know, I think what you said about some people having this just irrational yet completely locked in view of, no, I'm never doing that. I'm never doing that. Everything fits somebody or it wouldn't exist. You know, I mean, it's the option has to exist for a reason. And if it wasn't being used by people and wasn't delivering results for people, it eventually would go away. And I mean, like, for instance, personally, I'll take it out of the financial realm, although a little bit in the financial realm. I drive too many miles for a car lease to ever make sense for me. But I know that there are people that a car lease makes sense for, like actual customers, not just dealers, okay?
Sure.
So in something like this, I mean, this is a thing where I think this underscores the benefits of the free consultation that people can get with you at Aptus, and that they might have this whatever objection for whatever reason to annuities. But when you demonstrate it through research that you didn't do, somebody else did it, it's not like you're trying to stack the deck here. All of a sudden, that makes perfect sense for somebody in that circumstance.
Well, also bear in mind, it's important to always, we talk about it all the time, but we have a fiduciary responsibility and are, in fact, fiduciary. So I'm not trying to sell you an annuity contract through this conversation. All I'm saying is, in our office, and I think in everybody's financial plan, you should look at every investment on a net-to-net basis. What is my net benefit? How does it apply to my situation? And what is my net negative?
Mm-hmm.
So what are the negatives with annuities?
Yeah.
Let's address them. So the negatives with annuities, you'll hear all the time, is they're expensive. Are there fees associated with annuities? Of the four options I just gave to you, variable annuities are historically very, very expensive. It is an expensive way to own mutual funds. Now, there might be some benefits in there that you really like, and maybe then it applies to you. We haven't talked about those, but on the fixed indexed annuity, there are plenty of them that don't have any fees at all. So that kind of negates that. So the other issue is when you get all these guarantees that we're talking about, well, how does the insurance company make money? You agree to leave the money there for a period of time. That's mm-hmm. how they make money. So you might have to lock that money up for 5, 7, 10 years in order to get everything I just said. That's a negative. So I wouldn't suggest that if you have $100,000 to your name and you're going to need 20% of it a year, that you put all $100,000 in something that you can't touch 20% a year. It doesn't make any sense. But what we end up doing with investments is, I guess, hopefully this metaphor won't land flat, but if we put 100 people in a room right now, I promise you at least two of those would be kind of not great people.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just the way it is. You can't get 100 perfect people
That's
in
right.
a room. Well, what we're doing when we compare the annuities to, or whatever we're comparing as an investment sometimes, is we say, we use those two people as an example and say the whole group sucks.
Right.
Well, that's ridiculous. So are there bad, you know, bad actors in the annuity world? Yeah, there's some really crummy contracts that are not leaning in your favor, for sure. But there are also some really good ones. You just have to have the decoder ring to find out which ones are good and which ones are bad. And the only way you get that is through education, which is why we have a process.
Yeah, absolutely right. And I will say, you know, personally, my wife and I are clients at Aptus, and that is what we gained from going in and meeting with Josh and the team was education. We were taking care of our retirement ourselves. We're not on the cusp of retirement, but we're not like so far away that we can afford a big mistake either. And what we really wanted was somebody who could explain to us a strategy, could craft a strategy, one that we could buy into, but not just buy into because, hey, we're going in and we're never going to do this and we're always going to do that or whatever. But no, we wanted to be educated. We wanted to understand it. And we came out of our meeting with Josh and the team with that kind of peace of mind. And I would just tell you that that is something that you can pursue for yourself. If it works for you, great. And, you know, that might lead to you becoming an Aptus client. The way to start that process is to call their office and get your appointment, 614-917-1040. You can set up your appointment online. Their web address is aptuswealth.com. aptus.com. That's spelled A-P-T-U-S. They're located not far from 23 and 270. And if you'd like to hear Josh and I discuss topics like this more, perhaps more in a current events type situation, join us for Money Monday on 98.9 The Answers. Josh comes on every Monday at 12:30 p.m. So when you have conversations with clients, how receptive are people who have this initial maybe hard stance against annuities to understanding that, hey, wait, they might not fully understand it? And I want to make clear, like, you're not a firm that all you do are annuities, and so we're talking about the benefits of annuities because I want more people to come in and buy annuities. You offer a whole bunch of different array of options there.
Yeah. We're certainly not focused exclusively on annuities, but I think this applies, you know, this conversation applies to all types of investments, whether it's annuities or being invested in the stock market or bonds or whatever it might be. Usually when a client comes in and they have a preconceived notion or negative idea about some sort of investment, I just ask the question, well, what don't you like about it? And usually, not always, but usually it's some sort of story. Well, I knew my aunt had one and she really hated it. Why did she hate it? I don't know. I just know that she complained about it all the time. What were her complaints? She said she hated it. All right. Yeah. I'm going to need more words.
Yeah, I don't know what that means. She hated it. Right.
Yeah. So sometimes it's just, it's a lack of education. In other instances, they have had an experience with a certain type of investment product. And remember, I said there's always going to be bad actors out
there. Of course.
And they got the old maid. Whether it was just inconvenient timing or they were sold a bill of goods or they bought from the wrong company, the wrong product, the wrong whatever it is. And in those instances, that's fine. If you've already had, you know, once bitten, twice shy, we don't have to use annuity contracts. We don't have to use stocks. We don't have to use anything. We can build the plan customized to whatever it is you like. And to that end, I will tell you that we have plenty of clients that have no money in the market at all. And we have plenty of clients that have no money in annuities whatsoever. And that's okay. It's your plan. My role in this is to provide you with the education and the options for you to choose from. Ultimately, it's your money. You got to live with it. So you better know what your choices are and then pick the ones that make the most sense to you.
Are annuities something that fit someone who is in a certain length of time away from retirement, or would never fit someone who's in their 20s and just starting saving for retirement? Or are they flexible in their terms and all the other aspects of them that there may be reasons why it would fit anybody no matter how far away they are from retirement?
In general, I would say annuities really shouldn't be investigated seriously until you're probably in your 50s.
Okay.
When you're kind of in that like 10 to 20 years out. Now, that said, I have clients in their 40s that have annuity contracts. Why do they have annuity contracts? Well, if you come to my office and say, I would like to try and earn more than I can get out of my savings account, but if you ever come back to me and say, we lost one nickel, you're fired. I can't live with that. Or I can think of a client right off the top of my head. She's in her early 40s. She has a pension. She has Social Security. She has zero debt already. House paid off. Everything paid off. She is not married. No kids. And she says, I'm not going to get married and I'm never going to have kids. I'm not building my net worth here. I don't care about passing it on. I'm just trying to make my money work better for me than it is in the bank. But I don't talk to me about stocks. I just don't. Even having a conversation about finance makes me uncomfortable. All right. Let alone talking about stocks. Well, then maybe that's a good fit for her. You know, maybe it is, maybe it isn't, but it shouldn't be excluded as an option altogether.
That's one of the things that Sherry and I really liked about our conversation with Josh, is that he does get to know where you are in life and maybe how you've come to arrive at the conclusions that you have about certain investment options, what you understand about investing. And we're very happy there. And I think that it's certainly worth your time to go in and get that free consultation. Set it up online, aptuswealth.com, APTUS, aptuswealth.com. Make your appointment on the phone, 614-917-1040. They're located just off Route 750 in Lewis Center. And Josh and I will continue our conversation in just a few minutes. Thank you for joining us for the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Radio Show. I'm Bruce Hooley here with Josh Pick of Aptus Wealth Management. We appreciate your time. Thank you for being interested enough in our content, which will help you become much more educated and equipped to understand growing your money and arriving at financial independence later on in life. This show will replay on Saturday at noon. It airs originally at 7 p.m. on Friday nights, and you can join Josh and I for the Aptus Retirement segment that we do each Monday called Money Monday on the Bruce Hooley Show at 98.9 The Answer. So, Josh, we have discussed some things about the current situation with the U.S. government and paying its bills and the interest and debt and all that. We folded that into a conversation on annuities and how those can play into retirement savings. And now I'd like to turn our attention to something that used to be very, very common, which is you'd work for a company for your entire life. You'd get a pension, you'd retire, you'd combine your pension with your Social Security. And that was how you dealt with, you know, your financial situation, your house payment, your bills and stuff like that later on in life. Pensions now are not as common as they used to be. What percentage of your clients still have pensions, and what percentage of clients would you anticipate that being a big chunk of their retirement going forward?
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. It used to be retirement was pretty turnkey. It's hard to screw up. You got Social Security, you got a pension, maybe you had 4 shares of GE stock because you thought it was cool.
Yep.
Maybe a CD. And between the pension and your Social Security, you're probably pretty good. When I was growing up, I grew up in Pittsburgh and very blue collar, you know, union town. And I remember as a kid growing up in a, you know, lower middle class area, everybody said, oh, they're doing really well. They have a pension.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yes, right. That was a great thing.
Now, if we rewind the clock back to when I was a kid, about 8 to 9 out of 10 people had a pension. Fast forward to today, and the number, most of what I see in research is coming back at less than 10% of people in the United States have a pension. And we can probably very easily know where they work, right? I mean, they work for for Ohio State. They work for the government. Now, why is that a problem? Because really the onus is back on you. Now, we've heard all the stories about it's because companies are greedy that they're getting rid of pensions or because of X reason, and it's just another shot on the little guy. The reality of it is, and I'm not saying that that's not partially true, but the reality of it is, life expectancies have gotten a lot higher. And if you think about where interest rates have been over the last 20 or 30 years, pensions have to invest their money really, really conservatively because they have to pay future obligations to you for the rest of your life, no matter how long you live. So what do they need to invest in? Very conservative, safe things. Yeah. So the money's available and then pay for the rest of your life. Well, if interest rates are in the toilet and people are living 5, 10, 15 years longer than they were before, you can probably think of just here in Ohio, across the Ohio Valley, for example, the amount of companies that folded and lost their pensions because of this problem. So what the economy essentially did, or companies as a whole, is they said, well, you know what, we're going to go to a different model. That was a defined benefit model. Now we'll go to a defined contribution model, which simply means it's on you now. Now, hopefully you work for a company where they do a matching on your 401k or something like that. But ultimately, it's up to you to invest. Now, ironically, we just got done talking about annuities. A pension is, in fact, an immediate annuity. So if you don't like the fact that you don't have a pension today, you can build your own. Buy a deferred annuity, guaranteed rates. At a future date when you retire, you annuitize it, and looky there. Now you have a lifetime income stream that resembles a pension. So what can people do to help get back to the retirement of old? Well, we talk many times about having a three-legged stool, right? Yep. Well, in the past, you had Social Security, a pension, and then some side investments. There's three legs. Now most people have Social Security, 401k. That's it. Conversation over. It's only two legs. It's not a very sturdy stool. So maybe you should do some of that ancillary investing by building your own pension. Now you have a three-legged stool.
Okay, so how would that look? What would that look like, a person building their own pension? Take me through, like, maybe at what age a person should start thinking about that, what kind of monthly investment that would look like, and maybe a wise place, given, let's just say people want to hear it today on the show and they say, that sounds good to me, I think I ought to do that, given current market conditions, where you might want to place those assets.
Yeah, so I'll give you a very common one that we see very, very frequently. Because of this issue that we all have defined contribution plans in the form of a 401k, 403b, et cetera, the IRS allows for And most companies allow for something called an in-service distribution from your 401k. And what that simply means is I'm still working for my company. I work for AEP. Mm-hmm. I'm contributing to my 401k. They're matching my money there. But now that I'm 59 and a half, I'm not retiring. I'm just old enough. They will allow me to take a portion of my 401k out while I'm still working, roll it into an IRA. So this is not a taxable situation. And I can allocate some of those dollars to a deferred annuity contract, knowing that I'm going to get a contract that's just long enough until I retire. So let's say I'm 59 and a half and I want to retire at 67. So I get a 7-year annuity contract. I am getting a guaranteed interest rate. And then once I hit 67, I annuitize the contract and I have a pension. So now I have some of my money still left in my 401k, some of my money that's being directed by me in a guaranteed pension stream, mm-hmm. and still have Social Security, of course. So, you know, that does not mean, by the way, with this in-service distribution that your only option is to put the money in an annuity contract. If you're listening here, you have the ability to put it in whatever you want. So the huge advantage of this in-service distribution is if you're looking at your 401k, or I'll use the federal government as an example. If you've ever been and looked at a TSP plan with the federal government, it's the government's 401k plan. They have less than 10 options in the 401k plan. So if you said, well, you know, I'd really like guaranteed something guaranteed, you basically have a cash option. Well, that doesn't get it done. Well, I'd like to invest in companies, but I want to put my money where my mouth is and not invest in companies that I don't agree with.
Yeah.
You can't do that. It's all indexes. Yeah. You have no control whatsoever. So if you want to have more control, more breadth of options, it's a great solution. Now, one of those solutions, again, might be just turning it into a pension stream.
Okay, so are we talking about a specific kind of annuity that would be this third leg of the stool if you were to build your own pension?
Yeah, well, there's a bunch of different ways we can do it, but the most advantageous way today is through the utilization of something called a guaranteed income rider. So the way a guaranteed income rider works, and I'll just use one as an example, mm-hmm. you put money into this contract. Let's say you put in $100,000. For the purposes of income, it grows at a guaranteed 8.25%. So you know every single year for the purposes of my income, as long as I take it as a pension, then I'm getting 8.25% growth on it. When I reach a certain point, you know the percentage payout that you get off of that for the rest of your life. So you can calculate, well, how much money would I have to put into this thing to guarantee that I'm going to get $1,000 a month? Mm-hmm. Well, you'll need X dollars. Mmm-hmm. Perfect. Because now I know my Social Security is going to be $3,000. I'm going to have another $1,000 out of this. Cool. I need $4,000 a month. The rest I'll leave in my 401k or my IRA. Right.
Set up your free consultation with Josh and the Aptus team to find out more about this option, building that third leg to your retirement stool, by calling their office, 614-917-1040, or you can do your appointment, make your appointment online, Aptus Wealth, APTUS, aptuswealth.com. As far as online, you can also be a client of Aptus and be in contact with them digitally. That is one good thing we got out of the pandemic was an increased reliance upon electronic communication. So they do have clients outside the Columbus area. But if you're in the Central Ohio area and you wonder where Aptus is located physically, they're just off Route 750, that is, close to or actually in Lewis Center, not far from the 270-23 interchange. So back to pensions, when you were talking about pensions and what undermined pensions being extension of life expectancy, when you were talking about a pension, like it almost reminded me of the pickle that we're in with Social Security, and that when Social Security was designed, we thought, well, sure, we always have more people coming in and paying into Social Security. We have population growing, so we'll have more people paying in than are taking out. What they didn't anticipate was more people living longer. So did pensions kind of fall out of favor specifically or solely because of that? Or did the, the decline in American manufacturing play into that? Because we can all remember he's got a UAW pension or, you know, the steel worker pension like in Pittsburgh. Like, man, that guy's set for life. Well, not so much, but some of that might not be a life expectancy issue. It might be a decline in American manufacturing issue.
I think it's a combination of factors. I think not only a decline in American manufacturing, I think companies going public and having to be responsible to their shareholders mm-hmm. and cut costs where they can, that becomes a huge issue when you're trying to figure out how can we add money to the balance sheet. Well, our biggest liability, much like we were talking about the federal government with the first, we have all this entitlement spending that we can't get away from. Mm-hmm. Well, what if we could? Boy, that would make our balance sheet and our income statement look a heck of a lot better, and private companies have the ability to do that. But then couple that with, you use Social Security as an example. When Social Security came out in 1935, the average life expectancy was 63. You couldn't start collecting Social Security until you were 65. It was pretty well funded.
Yeah,
right? I mean, not too many people got to even collect it. Fast forward to today, the average life expectancy is more like 80, and you can still collect at age 66 or 67 at full retirement age. This is a much different scenario, and the same thing applies to pensions.
So let's talk about another what used to be a staple of people's retirement. I know that I remember my parents talking about the joy of being able to burn their mortgage, the joy of owning your home, of not having to make a payment anymore. And I've been looking at a lot of headlines recently about where we are in the American housing market. And there's this view out there that buying a home is not as attainable as for young people as it used to be. I've got all kinds of numbers here about the equity that people have now in their homes and things like that. And I know that there are people who advocate very staunchly, very loudly, that the best way to invest your money is to invest it in real estate. Maybe not in a property that you own, but you own a real estate investment trust, which is essentially, like I think, a mutual fund with real estate. So in terms of the significance, the utility of real estate as an investment and as a backstop for people in retirement, how has that changed over the years and where does that sit right now?
Yeah, we'll talk about both things. Private ownership of your own home, mm-hmm. and then investing in real estate, because they're two different things, I believe. Buying a home versus renting, there's a huge amount of social value in that. If you look at communities where most people are homeowners, typically those communities have a better family orientation. And yep. there's a reason why the government really pushes people and does, you know, VA loans and FHA loans and all these things to try and encourage homeownership. That said, I think the big problem, and I can only speak, this is anecdotal evidence, but if you think back to when you were growing up, when I was growing up, people would buy a home and they might own two homes in their entire life. Maybe.
Yeah.
I can think to my in-laws, for example, they've only owned, it's been very recent that they have a second home. They mm-hmm. lived in one home for 50 years.
Sure.
Right. And when you do that, then there's a huge advantage to owning that home because you do pay it off. But what happens now? The average homeowner only stays in a home, 5 to 7 years before they move on to the next one. And very rarely do people do lateral moves, so they consistently move up and up and up. And what I see predominantly is at least 50% of the clients that I see do not have their home paid off, no matter what age they are. And it's because they've moved the needle. They just keep moving, keep moving, keep moving. Now, the problem with that is in order to fund that mortgage, because I hear this all the time, well, you know, the interest rate's only 3%, so why would I pay it off? Well, you have to take money from somewhere mm-hmm. to pay that. And where are you going to take it? Well, typically it's your 401k. Well, what happens when you take the money out of a 401k? You pay taxes on it. So it's not just the 3% cost of the loan rate. It's the 3% cost of the loan rate plus the taxes you have to pay on the money to pay the loan.
Yeah.
You would be far better off in a myriad of reasons. And this is many of my colleagues are going to go, I don't agree with that. Let's think of all the reasons you'd be better off having your house paid off. The amount of income that you generate or that you live off of affects the cost of your Medicare. The amount of income that you pull outside of Social Security affects the taxation of Social Security. We can just keep going.
Yeah.
The point is, the less income that you require, the lower taxation you have. So if your house is paid off, that means you can live on less, which means your tax liability and all of the other programs that I talked about drop significantly. So paying off your house is a tremendous thing. But again, I'm not seeing a lot of people actually doing it. Now, investing in real estate is completely different. Investing in real estate has a huge amount of tax advantages. There's the benefit of leverage. There's the benefit of having somebody else pay the mortgage essentially for you, getting into a $300,000 house for just a down payment. So you have levered up your return. The downside to investing in real estate, where I see people go wrong, though, is what if you don't have a renter? What if there's a problem? What if you need to unload the house? You know, we're very narrow-sighted when we look at real estate and we mm-hmm. think about, well, over the last 5 years, if I would have bought a place, I could have sold it today. The rents are going up.
Right, right, right.
Different conversation in 2008, 2009. 2008, 2009, I'm sure you and I could both sit down right now and think of 10 people between the two of us that went, man, they had like 6 rentals. They over-levered. Nobody was paying the payments and they basically went belly up.
Yep.
So I'm not suggesting that real estate is not a great investment. I own rental real estate. However, you better know what you're doing, and you better be in a position to actually do it. So we include that in the blueprint. If you want to get involved in rental real estate, let's talk about it, and let's figure out what leg of the stool that's going to be and how to do it.
Yeah, set up that consultation with Josh and his team so that you are informed on these kinds of things and so that you are nimble enough to react to these changing market conditions. 2008, a time where a lot of people, and I know them, as Josh said, I've got really good friends who thought they were just fine, and they thought it was great to acquire properties with equity they had in other properties, and then, bam, they got blindsided, and they lost everything. So set up that consultation, 614-917-1040. Set up your consultation by making your appointment online at Aptus Wealth, APTUS, aptuswealth.com. Just hearing you in that last answer just triggered in my mind again the aspect that I have gained a great deal of admiration for you on. I knew you did a great job with, you know, different investment vehicles and maintaining, you know, close eye on everything and watching it and monitoring volatility and knowing how to react to it. But I think what I've not heard an investment advisor talk about before, to the extent that you talk about it, is what I would term found money, which is tax strategies. And I wouldn't have put that together that, you know, if I'm taking money out of my 401k to pay off a house, I'm also upping, you know, my tax liability. That to me is something that I don't think is self-evident to a lot of people. And so you've stressed before, but maybe I want to give you an opportunity to stress again, like how much of a retirement strategy is the piece that involves tax planning?
A lot. And I think, unfortunately, a lot of people have a sour taste in their mouth in working with people in my industry. There's a little bit of a black eye to this respect, in that, you know, you go to your financial advisor or your investment advisor, or whatever they're calling themselves, and you say, I'd like to learn how to invest in a more tax efficient way. And they usually say, I don't give tax advice. Matter of fact, most companies, if you look around, will say at the bottom in a disclaimer, we do not provide tax advice.
Yeah.
But then if you go to your tax advisor and say, hey, I want to learn how to invest in a tax favorable basis, they go, I don't do investments. And then it's left to you to try and interpret the data. When in reality, tax planning should be step one. And then the investments that you end up picking should be congruent with that tax strategy. And that's different for everybody. When in reality, what we typically hear is, let me tell you how my investment strategy is the best, and then, you know, you got to pay the piper.
Yeah.
That's just not simply the way that it works. And, you know, as we were talking about real estate, and we were talking about annuities earlier, it made me think of something, and this is a perfect example of why things aren't all bad, but they're not all good. So in real estate, particularly buying individual homes, what we're starting to hear now is going to be the advent of the 40-year mortgage, maybe even the 50-year mortgage.
Wow.
Because there's only two things that can happen. We can either have a catastrophic collapse of the housing market, or people aren't going to be able to afford homes, and that's just the way it's going to be. Mm-hmm. Or you're going to have to come up with a way to help them afford homes. And we've already seen this in the automotive industry. The average auto loan is many, many months longer than it was 5 years ago.
Yeah,
right?
No doubt.
You can get an 84-month loan on a car now. I mean, think of it, if you went back to your parents right now and said, I'm thinking about buying a car and getting an 7-year loan, they'd probably smack you around. Like, what's the matter with you?
Yeah. No, 4 years was standard when I bought my first car.
But this is commonplace
now.
Yeah,
no. I know.
So I think that 40-year mortgage is going to be pretty commonplace pretty soon. So is that a good idea? Of course not. Are you spending way more in interest? Of course you are. But let's think of an advantageous way to use that. Let's say you're retired and your biggest problem is cash flow. You're 75 years old. You don't want to leave your house. And man, we just can't afford the mortgage. And we got a 15-year mortgage or a 30-year mortgage. If they had a 50-year mortgage and it lowered your payment by $1,000 a month and you're 75 years old, do you care if it's a 20-year mortgage or a 50-year mortgage? If they gave you a 100-year mortgage, you should take it.
Sure, absolutely.
Right. So there is the disadvantages for young people. Now they have these exorbitant mortgages that have high interest rates. They're going to be paying them forever. That's terrible. But on the other hand, if used correctly, how cool is that? We're already retired and we can increase our cash flow and still live in the same darn house. And who cares if we have $50,000 in equity or $100,000? Who cares? We get to stay in the same place.
Yeah.
So there's, anytime you're looking at investing, you have to look at the pros and cons of everything. And I'm glad that there's options, because the more options we have, as long as we're educated and smart about how we use them, the more we can manipulate them to fit our lives best.
And that is really where I think Josh and the Aptus team excel, is helping you understand those options and allowing you to get into a position where you can take advantage of them. Set up your free consultation at their office in Lewis Center, just off Route 750. Call their office, make the appointment, 614-917-1040. Or you can make your appointment by setting it up online at Aptus Wealth, APTUS, aptuswealth.com. So here, when we talk about taxes and talk about real estate, there is, you know, a real estate tax, property tax. Is there anything with property taxes that can be avoided, or those are truly the thing that you just have to deal with it and pay the piper?
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, you really can't outrun them. I mean, of course, as you get older, there's the Homestead Act and some things that at least lessen the blow. But ultimately, as somebody who lives in the Olentangy Tangi School District, I assure you, there is no outrunning that real estate tax bill. Now, something you should consider as you're looking into retirement is, if you're thinking about moving, it is not the same everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Just like, you know, states like Texas and Florida don't have income tax, there are certain states that have historically really, really low property taxes. And then there are states that tax your Social Security and your retirement income, and there are states that don't. So as you're looking at it, you have to apply to your own situation. So let me give an example. If you're going to, if you have, if you're going to live on $1 million a year and you really like to enjoy life, but you're cool with a $300,000 condo, you probably want to live in a state with no income taxes, but you don't care how high the property taxes are. If you're going to live in a $10 million house, well, you can see where this is going,
exactly.
Right? So same kind of thing, but ultimately, if you're sitting in Columbus, Ohio right now going, how can I minimize my property taxes? If you have an idea, please call the show and let us both know, and Bruce, you and I can take advantage of it, because I don't know anything.
Yeah, and the other thing I would say too is like, I just have learned from talking to you just about kind of everyday things that I wouldn't think are things I'd run by a financial advisor, that it doesn't hurt to just ask the question. For instance, the area where I live is kind of a rural area. It's booming. A lot of homes are being built. And a lot of people move out there because they think, ah, the real estate taxes are low. They are. Guess what? But the local income tax is added on to what you're paying somewhere else. So there is a tax that's waiting for you like a lion ready to jump on you. And you get to your April 10th meeting with your accountant and you're like, holy cow, my tax bill is higher than it was where I lived before, where I thought my taxes were outrageous, which is why I moved to where I moved to.
Yeah, I mean, a perfect example of that is where our office is located is very purposeful. To my knowledge, it's the only place on that Polaris Parkway.
That corridor
that is located in a township rather than in the city of Columbus. And if you work and live in a township, which my house is in a township as well, then you pay no city income taxes. So if you think about the average city income tax being 2.5%, just by where you elect to work and live saves you 2.5% on your total gross income. So you can see how that number is pretty big. Now, if you're making $100,000 a year, that's $200 a month that you can apply back to your mortgage, right? So it's important to make these decisions not emotionally, but make them with some sort of thought behind them.
Yeah, and we always talk about on this show about getting disciplined and finding a way to start saving if you're not saving for retirement. And then the big issue becomes, well, where do I find that money? I don't want to compromise my current lifestyle. You know, but there are always ways to find money in your budget. Maybe it's smart tax planning. Maybe it's foregoing one coffee a week. But these are great concepts that the sooner you ingrain them, the sooner you become disciplined about them, the payoff at the end, the benefit for making these kinds of wise decisions that Josh advocates for here on the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Radio Show, that he advocates for on Money Monday on The Answer when he joins me at 12:30 p.m. every Monday on 98.9 The Answer, there is an enormous payoff at the end. So I would encourage you to get that free consultation with Aptus, 614-917-1040. Set it up online, Aptus Wealth, APTUS, aptuswealth.com.
The airing of this program by this station is not an endorsement or recommendation by the station of the products or services discussed in the program. The station does not guarantee the results of any investments made by a listener to this program.